If you're anything like me, you spent your childhood assuming that one day you'd meet your Prince Charming. You'd get married, you'd have a nice house in the suburbs, a dog, a career, and a couple of kids. It never crossed your mind that Prince Charming wouldn't come along, or that tragically you'd lose him before his time, or that your marriage wouldn't work out, or even that your biological clock would have other ideas. Or maybe you never really wanted that sort of happily ever after. Maybe you never wanted a man, but you did know you always wanted children. We're living in an age where, for the first time, women can embrace motherhood on their own terms. They no longer have to put their lives on hold waiting for the right man, or settling for someone who they know isn't right for them, just so they can become a mother. More women than ever before are embarking on the journey to become what's known as a solo mother by choice. And while for a lot of us it doesn't feel like a choice, but more a necessity, the bottom line is there are now options for you to be able to fulfill your dreams of motherhood if the traditional route isn't playing out as expected. The No Need for Prince Charming podcast will share stories of Australian women who have successfully become solo mothers by choice. They each have a unique story as to why they decided to pursue motherhood in this way and the journey they had to go through to make this dream a reality. The hope is that by sharing these stories, you'll have the knowledge and the confidence to embark on this amazing journey yourself if you determine it's the right one for you. In the words of Walt Disney, all of our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. All you need is faith, trust, and a little bit of pixie dust. So welcome to today's episode, Katie. I would love to start by understanding a little bit about who you were before you decided to become a solo mum.
So I was born in England, mm-hmm. and I lived in England for 27 years of my life.
Yeah.
And I then made the move to Australia after accepting a place to study midwifery.
Wow.
Yeah, in Adelaide. And went from there, really. I did a lot of gymnastics and trampolining before. And when I came to Australia, I competed at the Masters Games and also New Zealand as well.
Really? In trampolining? That's cool.
In gymnastics. So that was my life before I had kids.
And were you thinking at that time when you're moving out to Australia, you know, maybe I'll become a solo mum, maybe I'll have kids at some point, maybe I'll meet a partner?
Was never on my mind. I thought I might meet somebody, but that never ever happened. Didn't work out that way. Never had kids on the radar. Never had kids on the radar. I was like, they're having children. Never having children.
Wow.
At all.
Interesting being a midwife thinking that too, I would have thought.
Because I was like, well, I haven't got a partner, and is it really ethically correct to have a child? Is it the right thing to do without a partner?
Interesting.
Yeah, and that was my thinking, because with doing midwifery and thinking, does a child need two parents? That sort of thing. That was my way of thinking, and it went over my head like, could I have a child of my own, or is it the wrong thing to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So something obviously happened that changed that opinion, because we know that you're a solo mum now.
Yes. So in December of 2019, I've been living in the NT for about 2 years by that point.
Okay.
And in 2019, I was looking after a friend's little boy, and she went off and did something, and he gave me a hug, and I was like, oh, actually, hang on a minute. I actually really like to have a child. I'd like this feeling myself of having my own child, and not miss out on everything that a child has to offer. And I knew that I had a lot of love to give. Mm-hmm. And I had done everything in my life that I wanted to do. So I had moved to Australia, which I knew I was going to do before I was 30. I had got a cat. I had done midwifery. I was renting my own place, and I had a car, and I had all these things, and there was just something missing, I felt, by that point, end of 2019. was just something missing.
And that little hug around your neck was the thing.
Definitely, yeah. It just kind of was like, ah, that's what I need to do. Yeah.
Wow. So a massive light bulb moment just from that little one.
Massive, massive light bulb. Yeah.
And so once you made the decision, what did you go about doing to become pregnant?
So I think that I had researched, I looked at IVF clinics, I think. I can't exactly remember what I had done, but I had researched IVF clinics and knew them of Repromed.
Mm-hmm.
Knew of Repromed Darwin. I think that's the only clinic that we have up here, which is connected to the Adelaide one.
Oh, okay.
And I went and got an initial appointment, and the whole process was like an interview for a job.
Yeah.
Like every step, I don't know whether it's because you're a solo mother or whether, you know, it is, happens to heterosexual couples, happens to lesbian and gay couples. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was very much, went to the initial appointment, had all my bloods taken. They were all good. I think it was AMH was okay. And then I had that one. And then there was, and then I had this counseling session, which I don't know if everyone gets that.
Yeah.
But it was a sort of like a legal thing to say, like, you read all this and then you sign that you understand what everything consists of. You know, you're receiving somebody's donation and all the legalities and ethics and everything. So they went through all that. So at this point, I was like, it was like a job interview, because I was worried that I wouldn't be allowed to do it. That was my thing, because it was such like a job interview that I thought, my God, am I actually going to be allowed to do this? Are they going to allow me to do it? So yeah, it was a bizarre process, I found. And then I had to choose my sperm donor.
How did that go?
So I think I had about five profiles. I think there was five profiles. And yeah, I picked one of them. I picked one because like the kind of nationality sat with me well.
Mm-hmm.
And also
between Australian and international, or just Australian?
They were all Australian, but they had international backgrounds.
Okay.
Some of them. This person had an international background. And so I read through all their profiles and looked at the health and everything. And he was a similar age to what I was. Because I was 33 when I started the whole process and 35 when I had Florence. So, yeah, he was a similar age when he donated. What else? And he was, you know, he'd kind of really thought about his donation and thought about the future and when, if she wanted to have contact with him when she was 18. Because it was an Australian donor. Because for me, I was doing this process for myself.
Yeah.
But I had to give her something back. So I didn't want an American donor. And I was quite happy to pay the money for an Australian donor as well.
Was the Australian donor more expensive than international when you did it?
Yeah. So a vial of Australian donor sperm was $2,000.
Yeah.
So I had to really think about her, and I was like, you know what, I have to do this for her. So that's exactly what I did. And yeah, so that's, and then we got to all the injections. I have a severe needle phobia. So that was very, yeah.
How did you overcome that?
I don't know. I still haven't overcome it, but I just had to like get on with it.
Yeah.
And I got friends at work to inject it into me.
Oh, that's a handy bonus of being my wife.
So yeah, very much so. So I got some lovely friends at work to inject it when I was at work, and then it took me about probably half an hour to inject it into myself at home.
Oh, when you had to do it? Yeah.
I couldn't be a diabetic or have blood clots or anything, because like that would just be horrendous.
And so you actually went straight to IVF. Did you look at doing IUI first?
I did look at IUI, but I was like, oh, let's just go straight to IVF because it has a better success rate than I. And I didn't want to spend all that money and then go through rounds and rounds of IUI. I'd rather just go to IVF straight away.
And were you an Australian resident by that point or not? See.
No, so I funded the whole thing myself.
Very expensive golden child then.
Very expensive, yeah. But like, she's the best thing ever. So, yeah, she's wonderful.
So we got over our needle phobia, managed to get them all in. How did you go with the egg collection?
So the egg collection was interesting as well. So I had the same friend who hugged her little boy. She collected me after the egg collection. But yeah, it was an interesting process, and I actually bled a lot after the egg collection.
Oh, okay.
So they take me back in to surgery. But luckily I passed a clot and it all settled down.
That would have been a
But
bit
yeah,
scary.
that it's scary. Yeah, every time I stood up, it just bled. And yeah, but anyway, it sorted itself out. And I think they collected 8 eggs altogether. And I think six of them for I think six of them went, was it 8 or 10? And then six of them went further, got to a good stage. And one of them, which was her, was the grade A embryo.
Oh, nice.
The best embryo that you could have got.
I'm sure your quality specialist was very happy with you for making that one.
Very happy. So they grew them in the lab, and then I can't remember how many days after it was that I went and got it implanted into me, and I saw all the cells on the screen. And yeah, they put it into my womb, and and off it grew, and
Stuck.
eventually, stuck first time, first round. And I know that not everyone is successful with that at all, and I was pretty glad it did stick because I was like, it's costing a lot of money, so I was quite glad I didn't have to do it anymore. But I do understand there's a lot of people out there who don't have that kind of journey, and they have a lot of issues and have lots of rounds of IVF. And yeah, so I felt very, very lucky and very blessed to have that work first time. So
I'm assuming you ended up with some embryos in the freezer as well from that round with those results.
there's 4 or 5 in there, I think. So they're still in there. I probably wouldn't have any more children, because I'm on my own. I've got no family here. They're all in England or Sydney. And I think it would not be sensible to have another one. I think one is. And she is a beautiful little girl who loves life, and I don't need to add to that. So very happy with one.
Did you go into it thinking you might have more than one?
I did. I was like, oh, I'm gonna have two. And then I was even when she was first born, I was like, oh, I'll have another one. And then I'm like, no, I've had to take a lot of sick pay. If I take any more sick pay, I'll not get paid. And if I had two, then it would be more sick pay. That kind of thing. So,
It's an interesting adjustment, isn't it? When you're trying to go back to work and daycare and that sort of thing.
absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Did you manage to
So,
have a decent amount of time off before, after you had it, before you went back to work?
I had, I was very lucky. I had 2 years off.
Oh, wow.
So I used a lot of my savings. I think with not wanting a child for so long, I was able to save a lot of money. Which those savings were supposed to go on a house, but I had a child. So,
Big call, but it sounds like it was the right call for you.
absolutely, absolutely, definitely the right call.
And so, being a midwife, I'd assume there's be quite a lot of shift work or a bit of unpredictability with hours. How do you make that work with a little one?
So I'm very lucky in the fact that our enterprise agreement states that when you come back from your maternity leave, you have a year to do you have a year to do whatever shifts you want.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I am very lucky that they allowed me to do that. And I can actually work either three early shifts or 3 day shifts a week. So I work Wednesday to Friday.
Makes it much
So,
easier to manage
oh,
adjustment, doesn't it?
massively, massively easier. I'm very thankful and very grateful to them for doing that. Like, so grateful. Otherwise,
Know if
I
that's
couldn't do
standard
it.
for midwives or it's just an NT thing where you are.
I don't know. I have no idea. Absolutely no idea whether it's a nationwide thing. But yeah, very, very grateful to them. And you're allowed to take 3 years off if you want as well. They
Wow.
hold your job. So it's very, very, very good thing.
Guess you kind of expect them to be quite understanding, given your job is to bring other people's babies into the world. So,
You would hope so. Definitely.
wow. So pregnancy, how did that go?
The pregnancy was not too bad. I had more nausea than morning sickness. I had got told I was pregnant, and then I told my mom, and she was over the moon. But pregnancy, I had more nausea than vomiting. And I would vomit at the most random times. So I
Really?
would eat some and then it would just come back up. So I wouldn't be morning sickness, it would be day sickness. Like I'd just eat something and it would come back. That was a thing. And then about 20 weeks, I got the most horrendous headache, which I ended up in ED for.
Oh no.
It was just this headache that I thought my head was going to explode. And I had all the usual aches and pains that a growing uterus does. But yeah, pregnancy was not too bad. I
Imagine
remember one
you'd
day,
be quite prepared for most things anyway, from all your experience with other people having babies.
was very weird being on the other side. Like being on the other side as a from a midwife point of view. It was very, very, very weird. Very, very bizarre.
Assuming it's probably changed how you are as a midwife as well as a result, do you think?
It's absolutely changed me as a midwife. It's maybe more empathetic with women. I can share my experiences of everything with women, my breastfeeding journey and. Like I just more knowledgeable as a midwife. Like you don't have to have children to be a midwife, but I'm a lot more knowledgeable now than I was before.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad. And my hormones were off the chart. Like I was like a teenage girl again. They were horrendous.
You were like
That
angst and annoying.
was probably the worst thing that about pregnancy was the hormones. Like I would have literally have to go off and sit myself down and calm myself down and then come back.
Oh, really?
They were just horrendous. I would have to make sure that I wasn't near anyone sometimes.
Oh,
They were
dear.
just awful. Yeah.
But we got to the end and we have our gorgeous Florence now.
We did get to the end, and I had I had a friend come up and look after me,
Oh, nice.
called Rachel, and she looked after me from the beginning of April till the middle of May,
Oh,
so
wow.
she was here 6 weeks,
Did
two
she have
weeks
kids of
before
her
Florence.
own, or she just came to look after you?
Sorry.
Did she have kids of her own that she left behind to look after
Yes.
you? Oh, wow.
She has a now 17-year-old who was about 14 when Florence was born,
Yeah.
and she came up and she loved it. Yeah.
What a beautiful
So
friend to do that.
yeah. So Rachel, who we go back to our grandparents' days. And yeah, so our families have known each other for a very long time, and she decided off her own back that she would come up and look after us both,
Oh, wow.
which was the most amazing thing. And she cooked for me, she cleaned, we went out on excursions, we went out to have food together. It was just a really lovely 6 weeks, and like I'm so grateful to her and what she did for me. Like, so grateful. She looked after us well.
And having been there, done that, she would have known exactly what you needed, I'd hope, to support you through that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's
So after
amazing.
she left, how did you find the adjustment? Was it what you thought it would be? I'm sure you'd have lots of ideas in your head after being a midwife of what early days should be.
I didn't find it too bad. I think now is testing,
Okay.
like now more testing than a newborn, because like I breastfed, so I just every time she cried, just pop her on the breast and she fed, and yeah, I didn't find it overly difficult. I found if I needed, like even now, all along, if I need to cook dinner or I need to clean the house or anything like that, then she needs entertaining as well, and I find that the most difficult part. Like, I give her attention, but I have to cook the dinner. Well, I want to give her attention, but there's an inspection for the house, so I have to clean the house. And she comes and helps me, and it's great, but I do find that incredibly difficult. Like, through from newborn up till now, I found it very, very difficult. And I think that it's all I've ever known, so I've not known any different. Newborn phase was beautiful. I loved the newborn phase. Absolutely loved it, because we're in our little bubble, and we used to go out and do things and come back, and it was beautiful. It was really lovely. And I got to 42 weeks with her as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was determined. But if something was not right, if they said we need to deliver beforehand, I would have done that as well.
I guess being a midwife, you'd be a lot better at advocating for yourself and knowing what is and what isn't possible. Whereas a lot of women, especially after IVF, are told they have to be induced at a certain date just because they're IVF and other things, but you have different knowledge.
They were like, you need to do a scan at 36 weeks for a growth scan. I said, hang on a minute, we don't, because I've actually measured out my tummy and it's within range. Or they'll be like, you need to do a gestational diabetes test because you're IVF, because you're old, et cetera. And I'll be like, no, I'm not do that, thank you.
You're
I
not
was
even older.
really,
You were what, 33?
well, I was 34, 35, sort of. I think it was the IVF. They were like, we're going to do a glucose tolerance test. And I was like, no, it's fine, thanks. I'll not do that. That's okay.
I think there's the thing that so many things are put on because you're IVF,
Yeah,
on people who
absolutely.
needed it for fertility treatments. So there's other things going on, not just because they don't have a partner. And it's used donor conception, and they just everyone gets lumped in the same thing because it's IVF.
We'll induce you because you're IVF. And I'm like, why? Like, everyone donates their sperm to have a baby, don't they?
Is this how everyone gets pregnant? What do you mean people have sex? Who are these people?
I'm just like, why are you inducing me? I don't need to be induced. Let's see how things go. If there's a problem, I'll come back. And And I was really lucky because she slept pretty much most of the night for 4 months. And then once 4 months, it was like, no. So it gave me time to heal and time to like, set. And then by 4 months, she was like, oh, there's more to this world than look, I can see what's going on. And she was, yeah,
And
it
you've never
was,
slept again. No.
no, she would just like attach to me and then sleep. So,
Having 2 years off at the beginning sounds pretty magical. How did that adjustment go when you had to put her into daycare, though? Was that harder, do you think?
so. Was it 2 years off because it was during COVID? I couldn't go anywhere till 2022. So we went back and forwards to England during 2022, and then when 2023 came along for Florence called daycare, my mum came over for the first 6 weeks
How
and
beautiful.
helped me out. Yeah. So I did, so that first month, I just did loads of shift work while she was here. And she went into daycare. It was very challenging at first. I remember that first day I left her, I wasn't going to work. I cried, like it was awful. And there was a photo of her glued to the outside door. And that made me so much worse because I was like, left my child in this prison. And what have I done to her? And yeah, it was very, very hard. And even now, like, we had 6 weeks off to go to England just at the end of last year. And then we went to Sydney for a couple of weeks. And she was like a koala who didn't want to leave a tree.
Yeah.
We got around that by I took a bag of stickers and we called them super happy super stickers and gonna have a super happy day. And she's got little friends there now as well. So she sat with them, had breakfast, and has the stickers now. And it's made a little bit of a difference as well.
So how old is she now?
She's 3 in April.
3 in April. And how many times have you been to the UK with her?
Four times.
Wow. And that's like with COVID starting it, so you couldn't go anywhere.
So
You must
couldn't
have
go, my
some
mum.
great tips for traveling with a little one then.
Yes, make sure you go on a night flight. If your baby sleeps at night, go on a night flight. If you can breastfeed for as long as you can, because
Yep.
you just pop there because she won't eat airplane food.
Yeah.
So just pop her on the boob and off she goes, take snacks. Take more things than what you need to keep her going. Yeah. So, yeah, and just be kind to yourself. Take lots of spare clothes. Take some of them for yourself, for your sanity. And just let them. So I had a layover once in Dubai of 10 hours, but it was fine because put her on a night flight. And then I wasn't fine, I was exhausted. But so put on a night flight and then 10 hours of being in Dubai, she just ran up and down everywhere. Yeah, and just be kind to yourself when you go on a flight. And people help you as well. People do help you. So help you carry your stuff if you want it. I always say no, because I am.
Because you're still numb, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very, very, very stubborn. Also, I found that traveling with a 2-year-old, an over 2-year-old, is a lot easier because you can attach headphones to the in was it onboard entertainment. She just watches that, and it's great.
Yeah, really nice that they can go to sleep during it, isn't it? But then, do you find that you can sleep if she's sleeping next to you, or do you sort of freak out and stay awake?
Well, I tried to sleep, but the airline hostesses, the crew will poke me to wake me up for food. So I'm
Yeah.
in this deep sleep with her like this, and they'll go, "Madam, madam, madam, food." And I'd be like, even if you tell them, you either tell them or you don't tell them, it doesn't matter, they'll still wake you up. So I don't know if that's there.
Signs like hotels to say leave me alone.
Well, the stickers on there, but then they ignore them.
Yeah.
And just, yeah. So,
So being away from the UK when you had your baby and it was COVID, how did your mum take that? It must have been tough for her.
she just accepted it because my father had died in August of 2020.
Oh.
So she that's all right. So she knows all about like hardship and stuff like that. So she was sad that she couldn't come, but then when we went to see her, she was 9 months, and there was a lot more that my mum could do with Florence. So, it's not she wasn't the end of the world. Like we have FaceTime, which 20, 30 years ago you didn't have.
No, we're very lucky we had the technology, wasn't it?
So she could see her grow up. She could be part of Florence's life. She could read books to her. She could sing songs to her, which was a great help for me because I could go off and do a bit of cooking or whatever, and Florence was entertained. And a playpen was one of the best things that my mum bought me. Yeah, I could plonk her down in there. I could do things safely, and I knew that she was contained in something.
And grandma singing
So,
from across the other side. Brilliant.
and she loved it. Florence loved the playpen. Absolutely loved it. Had toys to play with. Was very happy. Would entertain herself very easily.
So, were your mum and dad supportive of you making this decision from the beginning?
Yes, my mum was very apprehensive about me making this decision. I'm very apprehensive about me telling my father that I was having this baby on my own.
Okay.
But my mother eventually, when I'd had her and she saw how amazing Florence was, she was like, oh, I'm so happy you did that. It was the best thing you did. And my father, I told him when I went to England, because I got stuck in England for a little while, sort of in the middle of all this process, before I'd started IVF treatment. And so I told him the whole process, and he wept all night, cried all night, because he was, I think it was a mixture of like, I'm probably not going to see this child versus, oh my gosh, this is like a wonderful thing that you're doing. Didn't have a great relationship with my father all my life. But yeah, he was just like, he was over the moon that I was doing this. And he said, oh, you're going to keep going until you have a child, aren't you? And I thought, I don't think you realize how much this process actually costs. But yeah, I try and have this baby. But he was, he was so over the moon. And I tried to do the NIP test, which is you find out the gender, so that I could tell him before he passed away. But he passed away when I was like 10 weeks pregnant. So yeah, so he never got to see like what gender she was. But
But
yeah, he
knowing
was,
that you were pregnant and that you were going to have that lovely little life that he wanted.
yeah.
Oh.
So yeah.
It's gonna make
So yeah, that was that. Oh yeah. So yeah, but he was like, yeah, he was, yeah, just that was them. And
I
yeah,
still felt
I
really
mean,
good to have his blessing and his support as well, though.
yeah, because the only two people that I told during the process was obviously my mum and my dad, but also Rachel. I think I talked to her about it before I spoke to my father about it. And yeah, there was just the three of them that really knew what was going on. And yeah. But yeah, mum was like, it's the best thing you ever did. I'm so glad you did it. Because she's the only grandchild. So at the moment, she's the only grandchild.
So,
Yeah.
once you were pregnant, did you tell a lot more people, and what was their response to you?
Yeah, so it was very, very interesting responses from very lots of different cultures.
Okay.
So COVID had hit, so I obviously couldn't go and look after COVID patients because I was pregnant, and obviously at that point they didn't know what COVID would do to pregnancy. So I had to tell my managers that I was pregnant at 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Not ideal.
Yeah, I had to pull, was it 6 or 8 weeks? It might have been more like 10, I can't remember when it was, but it was early, it was first trimester. And they said, oh, what? I didn't think you had a partner. That was the first thing one of them said. I said, no, I'm doing it on my own. Okay, so, and then when I told women from an Indian background, an Indian culture, they, because obviously they don't do anything like that. It's very much you have a husband, you get married and have a husband. And also I found out that gender, you're not allowed to know the gender in India. It's illegal.
Oh, really? Interesting.
They kill either one of the, I think they kill off baby
Good.
girls.
Yeah.
So that was, so I told Indian culture and they were like, but what if she wakes up? Like, what, you'll have no sleep, blah, blah, blah. So they just couldn't get their head around that that was happening. But yeah. Yeah, lots of mixed responses. The child health nurses had pretty bizarre responses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like they would always talk about contraception. And they'd be like, "Do you know how this person was conceived?"
This is like immaculate conception, pretty much.
Yeah, I know exactly. So I remember this child health nurse was like went on for about, I don't know, half an hour about contraception. And I was like, yeah, I
Ever
kind of
read
just
my
sucked up.
file?
Yeah. But they never ever read my files. So every time I went in, they'd talk about a partner or a husband or whatever. And I'd be like, so I never went back after about 6 months. It just stopped going. It's not good. And even now, if I'm going, if I'm going somewhere, they'll say, "Oh, my partner," or "How's her dad?" That kind of thing. So it's still, the mindset is still changing. But yeah.
I'm guessing it's not as common in the NT either. Like, I haven't come across too many solo mums like this.
So we've got a solo mums group, and I think there must be about 10 to 15 mums. That's it,
Like that.
that we know about. I think there's about 10 to 15 that we know about. But apart from that, yeah, it's not that common. And as a midwife, I don't come across, I think I came across two or three maybe, who have done it on their own. Oh.
So you've met a few of the solo mums around you. Have you built a bit of a community?
Yeah, and they're lovely. They have all have different stories to tell.
Yeah.
We've got some, I think there's one's got two, people have got two children. A couple have got two children. And some other, there's a few who've got a couple of children. And also, yeah, many have just got one.
Yeah.
Some family here, some don't. Yeah. So, yeah, and a range of different stories. Absolutely, a range of different stories. Yeah.
And have
So.
you made any progress or given any thought to meeting any donor siblings or the donor or anything?
Yes, so we've got in contact with one donor sibling. She's
Oh, really?
got eight donor siblings.
Wow.
Got in contact with one. So yeah, lovely little person.
And was that facilitated through the clinic in the NT or?
So it was facilitated through Donor Conception Facebook page.
Which I think has just been shut down, unfortunately.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Where they match people? Yeah.
Got a
Oh.
notification the other day. Unfortunately, due to privacy, they've decided to shut it down, which is such a shame because it was such a great resource for all across Australia.
Massively, massively. That's where I met this person. But then I went to the clinic and I said, "Oh, I think the one that you've put me in touch with have actually met her through Messenger. Haven't met her yet, but I've met, done a messenger talk, messenger." So yeah,
Do you know if all the other siblings are in the NT as well, or are they across Australia?
they are, no idea where they are. I think there's like three girls and five boys
Wow.
altogether. Yeah, I would love to write a letter to the donor, but I have no idea where to start. Like zero idea where to start. I'm just so grateful to him. So grateful to him. So yeah.
I'm the same, like, especially after doing that interview with the anonymous donor. It's like he said he got a thank you, and I was like, I want to do that, but it's like, how do you even put it? How grateful you are to this person for giving you this opportunity.
He's just the most grateful and thankful gift that I've ever received. Like, she's beautiful. Like, she's just a wonderful little girl. And like, I have no words big enough to thank him for what he's done for me. Like, none whatsoever.
And how do you feel becoming a mum has changed you as a person?
I think I get asked that quite a lot, that question quite a lot. I don't know, more patient maybe sometimes. more aware of the problems around the world, more aware of what it's like to be a mum, and actually, kind of sort of conceptions I had before had her, like, oh, you shouldn't give your child screen time. Oh, that's not a thing that you should do. And no, you shouldn't like give your child screen time. You shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Oh, they should have like a routine. It's like, no, I'm very laid back. Very just very laid back. Now, like, if she goes to bed whenever, I'm happy with that. And we fit our lives to fit in with each other. And yeah, I think things don't bother me is I kind of try and let things go a lot more. Sense. Like, I just think, oh, if she wants a bit of chocolate, just give her a bit of chocolate. It's fine. Like, you pick your battles. Like, I'm able to pick my battles. But yeah, I think I buy far too many toys because like it's fun. I probably spend my money in other ways than I would beforehand. No, I don't know. Just suppose. I don't know. It's not really. Has it changed me that much? It's just added a whole that new dimension and a whole new fun aspect of my life that I didn't have before. My life is complete because I have my child and I have my cat. So my life is completely, totally complete.
And if you could look back now, is there anything that you wish you'd done differently in your journey?
Not enjoy it more, but just sort of not really look to the future too much. Like just live every day as it is, just enjoy her. Because once they turn 12 months, you've had that 12 months of absolute just pure joy. Live for the moment rather than be like, oh, let's do this thing, let's do this, let's do that. And don't look too much in the future. I think that's what you do differently. Yeah, I don't think I'd do much else
And any
differently.
advice for anyone who's just considering whether this is the right path for them?
You have no regrets. Just go for it. Like if you never know, if you never do it, you never know. Like we have a saying in the northeast of England called "Shy Ben's getting out." Like
What?
shy nothing.
Yeah.
If you don't know, you'll never know. And I would say don't worry about things like the dishes or the cleaning. Like, just enjoy your child. Don't worry about losing weight. Just enjoy your child. Like, take every day as an adventure.
Yeah.
You'll never be disappointed. And go out there, meet other mums, meet other solo mums. Go and do find out lots of where all your free activities are.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
because we do like the library. And we used to do we'd do something like a play group on a Monday afternoon, which is completely free. We have the fun bus up in the
People as
northern.
well.
Yeah, meet other people, go and do swimming lessons, take advantage of vouchers that your government's going to give you for free swimming lessons, and take advantage of all that free stuff. Go to free festivals, go to free children's activities. Go meet other mums, like you'll never be disappointed. Go to soft play, do everything you can with your child. And the first 6 months I found were easier because they don't move. So you
Yeah.
can go and enjoy a meal by yourself. So if you want to go have a meal on your own, get out the house. Don't spend all your time in the house. Get out there, do stuff. Yeah. And also get toys that are going to help you as kind of a second parent.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, get a toy kitchen for your corner of your room so they've got something to play with
I
while
cook
you're
at the same time.
just make your life as easy as possible. And if you can breastfeed, do it because it just makes you can sleep, like just and you can get out there and not have to carry them with you. And yeah, so if you can do all that, it's great. Yeah.
With some really wonderful advice to end on. So thank you so much, Katie, for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alicia, and this is the No Need for Prince Charming podcast, bringing you stories of Australian solo mums who created their own happy ending. If you like what you heard, please follow or subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, and leave a like, a review, or share with your friends to help others find it easier. Bye for now.